This podcast is offered by Jikoji Zen Center on the web at jikoji.org. Our programs are made possible by donations from people like you.
Morning.
Good morning.
Come all the way up here. To California to visit family, but my friends who live here let me here. I would like to Brown over there, who is the head teacher here. I'm going to talk about the words of Buddha, the Metta Sutra. Okay, it's near the beginning of the chant book, but I almost hesitate to. Sometimes if you open it, then you're not paying attention to me, you're reading, but I'm going to go through it. Very slowly. Most of the chants in the chant book, like the Heart Sutra that we did at service, were written several hundred years after the life of the Buddha. And then we have chants written centuries later by Chinese and Japanese teachers. Still 700,000-800,000 years ago, but 1,000, 2,000, what's the difference? When I arrived here, I was going to give a talk on some, more of an intro talk, but we chanted this, and I was like, OMG, this is so important. I'm going to slowly. Okay, I read better without my glasses. First starts out. What should be accomplished? So, a person who is wise. Seeks the good and obtain peace. You might disagree, but we believe because you came up here. You're interested in peace. If you're not a little bit peaceful, you don't even have your act together to be interested in it. So, and seek the good. I'll just assume that's what you're interested in. So obtain the peace. I have a little trouble with the word obtained, because peace is pretty ephemeral. We kind of experience it, and then we get upset. But if you experience peace, you've obtained it. Easily contented and joyous. Okay, there's just so much in that sentence. I'm sorry. So strenuous seems a little weird, but as I presented a meditation instruction. Our meditation we do is a little bit athletic, that we usually use as wholehearted. And that's being present in the moment. We call it wholehearted. Here they call it venous. Upright. So meditation, we stress sitting upright, but upright's also an attitude. And sincere. So these words are kind of the same thing. But you can get a taste of the attitude. Without pride, easily contented and joyous. So one of the keys to suffering less is to be easily contented, perhaps easily contented. Path I'll learn in the future to be contented. Contented is something you can check in with. So just the simple things in life to train ourselves to notice contentment, to notice gratitude. And joyous, let one be joyous. So when we're not joyous, we could say, oh man, this makes it worse. I'm supposed to be joyous. But our teaching is that contentment's available, and contentment and joy are pretty close. I had a knee surgery a couple months ago, and it got infected, and I got a fever. I'm lying in bed in the emergency room. I'm chilled. I'm not feeling too good. My wife took a picture of me lying down. And I sent the picture to a friend, and she said, "You're smiling." I have proof. I have a picture. I'm smiling. And I told her the Zen saying, "Every day is a good day." So that's the practice of being joyous. Let one not be submerged by the things of the world. Well, of course we should take care of the things of the world. We should enjoy the things of the world, which we do. But there's this famous poem I'm always quoting, the world's too much with us. So we overwhelm ourselves with, we worry, freak out, have anxiety. So we kind of, surf at all, but we're kind of riding the waves of the world, but we often just get too submerged, too overwhelmed. So let one not be submerged. Let one not take upon oneself the burden of riches. It's pretty interesting, because I don't think I would turn down a bunch of money. However, when I get this fantasy, I have a lot of money, and I buy a house here, and I buy a house there, and I buy a house there, and I'm like, it'd just be so much to worry about. You know? I got, like, the more you have, the more there is to burden of riches. Let one's senses be controlled. Controlled's a little weird, but it's like the previous line about submerged. Senses are great, and enjoying our senses is great. We should, but we get carried away. My teacher always say, don't be tossed away. So some of the early Buddhism, they seem a little bit down on desire, but desire is great up to a point. Desire is natural, and then at some point, when our desire starts to kind of hurt ourselves physically and mentally, and when it hurts other people, that's called greed. So there's kind of this gradient between natural desire, which is wonderful, and then unfortunately for humans, sometimes it turns into greed. So that's kind of what let one's senses be controlled. Let one be wise, but not puffed up. So I struggle with this a little bit. Most of us have some kind of low self-esteem going on. And then we think, oh, high self-esteem, well, those people are arrogant. But better words are confidence. There's nothing wrong with confidence. Confidence is a kind of optimism. And confidence is not the opposite of humbleness. It's possible to be both humble, or at least, it's almost better to say not puffed up. I think you can understand not puffed up. Personally, when you get puffed up and then life pops that balloon, it's like, oh, thank you. Thank you. You can still be confident, but not puffed up. Let one not desire great possessions, even for one's family. That's the richest thing again. And let one do nothing that is mean or that the wise would reprove. So we try, and our principles in Buddhism are to be wise and to be compassionate. So being mean is definitely not compassionate. This is kind of an embarrassing story. I was in a work situation, and there was this guy that I kind of didn't like, and then I was like, oh, people always tell me I'm so nice, you know? And then I was kind of, sorry to admit, putting this person down a little bit, and then it's so embarrassing. I thought, well, I got a little capital, and I've built up so much niceness. Surely I can spend some of that capital. It's like, no, no, Cliff. That's a terrible excuse. There's no good excuse to be mean, is what this sutra is about. So here's the heart of the sutra. May all beings be happy. May they be joyous and live in safety. All beings, whether weak or strong, in high, middle, or low realms of existence, small or great, visible or invisible, near or far, born or to be born, may all beings be happy. So this is sometimes called unconditional love. So normally our love is somewhat conditional. We love and we don't love. But this is an envisioning the world where everybody wants everybody else to be happy. And this almost seems doable, especially, well, sometimes I sit at my desk and I study this stuff and I'm like, wow, I feel unconditional love. That's great. Then I go struggle with my family and people at my jobs. And I'm like, where'd that unconditional love go? Well, it's still there. And an interesting thing about love is, now we fall in love, we think it's the other person. Like, they have these qualities. It's them that it's the love's about. But really, it's our own capability to love is manifesting. The love is coming from us. And then later, unfortunately, it's sometimes the same person or just people we don't like. We say, that's that person. It's definitely that person that justifies this lack of love. But actually, that lack of love is our responsibility. So love comes from us, lack of love comes from us. Even though it seems like it's the other person causing it. But to me, this is just a simple, powerful, wonderful teaching. I'm just like, why the heck isn't Buddhism more popular? Because we've got this formula, may all beings be happy, including ourselves. Let no one deceive another, nor despise any being in any state. Let none by anger or hatred wish harm to another. So I listen to the news too much, so without getting into that, you might sense why I'm so excited about this teaching. Even as a mother, at the risk of her life, watches over and protects her only child, so with a boundless mind should one cherish all living beings. I get hung up on this a little bit. I'm a father, not a mother, but my only child? Like, if you had two children, wouldn't you still wish to protect both of them? But that's just my, I'm always looking for inconsistencies intellectually, but that's still the spirit. I'm not going to, I'm going to keep what the Buddha said. So with a boundless mind should one cherish all living beings. So a boundless mind gets developed by spending time meditating and by studying a lot of the Buddhist teaching we study that is based on non-dualism. Well, in this teaching, unconditional. Unconditional love, so that's boundless. And you might, you know, meditation's hard, it goes on forever, and studying non-dualism's kind of weird, because we obviously think dualistically, but by these practices, our minds become larger. Then our patience becomes larger, our capability to see things as they are becomes larger. So that's a boundless mind. Should one cherish all living beings, suffusing love over the entire world, above, below, and without limit. So let one cultivate an infinite goodwill toward the whole world. They repeat themselves, the idea in here, but it's to a large extent we aren't this way, so we need to sorry, This is good propaganda. We need to train ourselves in this way. Well, maybe we don't need to, but this is an option that the Buddhist teaching offers. And this type of teaching, when it talks about, the smallest. So supposedly, well, our skin's covered with bacteria. So I think I would like all that bacteria to be happy. Then I thought the other extreme. I thought, well, if there is a God, I hope he's happy. I just so anything you can imagine, anything you experience, we can add a wish for happiness to it. Standing or walking, sitting or lying down, during all one's waking hours, let one practice the way of gratitude. So Buddha was pretty big on being aware of what you're doing in the moment, being aware of your body. So he kind of said, well, there's four postures. You should know which one you're doing. Are you standing? So if you're standing in line, oh, standing in lines, that can be hard. Like sometimes if the line at an ice cream shop is too long, it's like, nah, I'm not gonna get the ice cream. Yeah, standing or walking. So walking's a great way to be mindful. Just walking around a house, walking anywhere, you just be aware of each of a step, one step. Oh, here I am walking, my foot's touching the ground. Sitting or lying down. So recently we got a recliner. So in a recliner, I'm not quite sure whether I'm sitting or lying down, I guess. I don't know where the setting is for anyhow. So just being aware of where we are, what we're doing, whatever we're doing, gratitude's available. Not holding to fixed views, endowed with insight, freed from sense appetites. One who achieves the way will be freed from the duality of birth and death. So here we go, the Buddha seems to be attacking our sense appetites again. The later Buddhist teachings don't seem to mention it quite in this way, but as I've already kind of explained. Well, okay. Hunger means we're healthy. I mean, if we're sick, we're not very hungry. So we have to kind of understand deeply. And then we can get so much joy just from how beautiful things look, the clouds are beautiful, plants are beautiful. Most buildings are beautiful. Some of them are like, yeah, couldn't they have gotten a better architect than the ones there? So, like I said, senses are wonderful, appetites are wonderful. Once again, up to a point where they aren't so wonderful, so we should be awake to what we're feeling, what we're thinking, what we're doing, and we can kind of, at first I didn't like that word control our senses, but we can kind of get a sense of, yeah, I'm enjoying this, and that's good. And then a sense of, I'm just spending too much time complaining about bad architecture, Why don't I just let that go, Who cares? Okay. And I said, not holding to fixed views. So Zen teaching's pretty big on this. We want to know truth. We want to know truth. So views, we develop a view in a certain situation that we, according to our wisdom, we decide that that's a pretty good view. But if it becomes fixed, we're not open to new information. We start to dislike people with other views. It's a real problem if views for humans, if we hold to fixed views. It's not that our previous views are wrong. Although there's a comedian making fun of spiritual practice there, they said, "Everything you think is wrong." But that's a joke. It's not everything we think is wrong, but we should rethink. We should be open to what is the situation we're in, and seek the truth kind of constantly. And fi a fixed view starts to become the enemy of the truth. I was giving a series of talks, well, I called them my diversity, equity, and inclusion talks, but I was going through historically and currently misogyny, mistreatment of the native people when we said colonists were busy colonizing, slavery, prejudice, all sorts of prejudice. I was going through all those, and then the text I was using didn't. I added a talk about what about my prejudice against people who don't like the Metta Sutta, who believe that hatred, who seem to enjoy hatred. There seem to be people like that out there. So there's this line from an early Bob Dylan song. I think it's an amazing line about people who don't hate nothing at all, Metta Sutta, except hatred. So I think that's just a and super insightful line of poetry that kind of describes me. Like, I'm trying to practice Metta Sutta. I'm imagining loving bacteria and God, and I love everything, and then, I'm sorry. The people who seem to enjoy hatred, yeah, I'm having a little trouble there. Oh, they said there's a, I actually don't do this practice, but they say if you have a home altar, you might have pictures of your family. Put up a picture of someone you really don't like on your altar. And then we do prostrations towards someone who, seems pretty justifiable that we don't like them. But we can also be interested in the Metta Sutta. We can also be interested in cultivating unconditional love and unconditional openness. We're so, well, it's the way our minds work, and it helps us with survival. It helps us in society, but the big emphasis is conditional. Unconditional, yeah, we don't get taught that very much. And it doesn't seem to make sense in a way, because conditional is, coming from our, the rules and talk we set up. Unconditional, here, unconditional is coming from what we're studying, from the mind, but unconditional puts us in touch with our heart. someone pointed out to me. So relating to people, they said we can be transactional. We're kind of taught to be, you know. I do this for you, you do this for me. It's conditional. And hey, I got a pretty good deal. We should get a good deal, shouldn't we? It's transactional, but there's another way to relate to people called relational. Relational, we're interested in a long term. What's best for them? What's best for us? Because there's a reality that I call oneness, but I'll have to do that in another talk. Oh, then, I'll finish here. Last line. One who achieves the way will be freed from the duality of birth and death. So one thing Buddhism does is point out the inevitability of death. Our death, others' death, the inevitability of old age. I'm sorry, I really hate that one. I'm a bad Buddhist. And inevitability of sickness. But in a way, if you can know the inevitability, then you become less afraid of death. Party goes, well, that's crazy. But, oh, if you want peace, being afraid of death isn't very peaceful. So that's where I go, well, no wonder Buddhism's unpopular. we're talking about working with sickness, old age, and death. It's like, no, I don't want to think about that. So I presented why Buddhism should be popular and why it's difficult. Okay, let me look at you instead of the text. Anything you want to talk about?
Thank you. Thank you for your talk and sharing the Metta Sutta with us. Can you, what is your favorite passage within the Sutta?
May all beings be happy. So there's it's called loving kindness meditation. And there's four phrases. Well, first you start off with yourself. And then you end with all beings, and in between you work through people you like, then you work through people you don't like, and you end up with all beings. But the phrases are, and you can, I'll just have you repeat in your mind after me. May I be happy. May I be healthy. Oh no, it starts with, may I be safe. May I be safe, healthy, happy, and at ease. Or my life have ease to it. Then, okay, I overthink things. It's like, well, doesn't happy cover ease? But actually, it means that may the conditions of your life. You can be happy even in uneasy situations, but we actually hope for ease. You can research this loving kindness meditation, and then you can pick a person you don't like, and you can say, may they be safe. And maybe if they felt safe, they might behave a little better. May they be happy. May they be healthy. May their life be easy. I took a one-day class in that, and I'm driving home, I think, Okay, for the rest of my life, I'm just going to say, may everybody be happy, healthy, at ease, and safe. But I think it lasted the 20 minutes till I got home, but it didn't happen the rest of my life. But I try sometimes. Any other questions, comments?
You know, is there any sayings on connecting with one's own body, particularly different body parts like the brain, like the heart, like the gut? Is there anything, any sayings around that?
Well, in the meditation instruction I ran through relaxing, there's a, in mindfulness, there's something called a body scan, where they take like an hour, you lie down, they take an hour to get in touch with every part of your body. I think you start with the top of the head and end with your toes. Buddhism stresses the body, but we don't have a handbook of exercises. But just sitting on a cushion, your body, you start to notice your body.
Yeah, I must think of a story. So that's the Buddha experienced the situation. When the eagle catching a rabbit, he just saved the rabbit from eagle. But the rabbit was so happy because the Buddha saved his her life. But the eagle was unhappy since he has no food today. So the Buddha said, "Okay, I want you to be happy, so you can eat my meat. So eat my body." So how do you consider that situation?
So I've got a great story about that. My Japanese teacher, he became a monk when he was 18, and he lived at the temple that was just his 80-year-old teacher and his 18-year-old kid, who, and the temple had ponds and wildlife. It's out in the country. And so this young monk became a teacher. He brought this question to his teacher. He goes, I see a snake about to eat a frog, and then I scare the frog away, and then I feel sorry for the snake." His teacher said, "In the morning, help the frog. In the afternoon, help the snake." So, thanks for letting me share that story, as it applies to our lives, your life. Well, this is where going beyond dualism and seeing the whole picture is helpful.
Very basic question.
Yeah.
How to sit still? Because when I'm sitting, I feel pain here and there. I keep moving. But I see you, a lot of people can sit still and straight for quite a long time during the meditation. How you stay that gesture?
So when I began meditating, well, these sit these, 40 minutes, sometimes longer, and oh boy, I had to uncross my legs like every 10 minutes. That's why I say it's kind of athletic. Your body kind of gets used to it. Your hips can open up, so it's easier for your knees. But I still have, so first thing I do, I don't use the word pain at first. I use the word sensation. So I'm having a sensation. And I explain this during instruction. And then at some point, like, you know, the sensation is, I'm going to change my posture. So the important thing is to sit, don't fidget, sit relatively still and stable. And I say we, you know, push the envelope just a little, because life, and then I struggle with, I try to explain this, and I go, I'm not promoting masochism, I'm promoting just a little bit of patience with life, because I stub my toe, I get toothaches, I go, wait till you're old. I mean, you get unpleasant bodily sensations, so we gradually have some stability, and then at some point, yes, please change your posture, and then sit still and practice breathing in that posture, and then switch back. And it's a combination of your body gets more used to it. That's mainly what it is, but it's a little bit like, yeah. Okay, the wonderful thing about a sensation is it helps you be in the present moment. So actually during a meditation retreat, I felt like sometimes I have a choice. I can sit in a posture with a little less sensation, but I know that my mind will be less present. So I actually choose a posture with, but like I say, it's not extreme. I still move when I want to move. But I kind of enjoy how present I am. And then I have to say, I'll be sitting, yeah, and there's some sensation, it's getting kind of intense. I decide to move my legs, usually about 10 seconds before the bell rings. So that's an experience I have.
Thank you.
I still have that experience. Hi.
Hi. Thank you so much for sharing everything. And so you just mentioned that we all wish to be at ease. And I think I relate to that a lot, because I think just today I was thinking that I wish that I can be at ease at work, like everything that can be, I encounter can be easily handleable by me. I think like that comes from, so I just started working for a year, and then like every weekend I worry a lot about the coming week.
Yeah.
And I think I don't feel pain from the specific work that I do, but I feel pain from, like, every day I need to think in the morning that I need to work very hard, like, fulfill my responsibility and not to add burden to others, so that no unexpectedness or surprise happened to other team members. And so living in this state of and like sense of urgency, I think. So how would you suggest on that?
Yeah, well, I was talking to somebody, I was like, society's kind of weird. They send you to school and then they measure you. And it's hard on the people that don't seem to measure as high as others. And it's also hard on ourselves. If we do measure high, we want to. I mean, we talked about being strenuous and wholehearted. It's very easy to, conscientious is good up to a point, and then we all become too hard on ourselves. So when we say, can feel compassion for others, we learn. I complained about being an old person, but so all you are young people, and I can tell from experience, it's hard to be a young person because we're concerned about our performance, we're concerned about success, we're concerned about doing well, and so two things happen. One is, as you get older, you just get more used to the situation. But I recommend, as you study and practice Buddhism, it's helpful, and okay, I'll just say, from my experience, crying is a very helpful part of Buddhism. Crying is a very helpful part of life, but it does get better, and it can get better as you. And then we end up, you know, talk about Buddhist teachers, but really we need to be our own coach and our own teacher and encourage ourselves. Okay, I'm just worrying too much, and hopefully I can slowly train myself to worry less. So, good luck.
This is my first time doing meditation, and I do have some random thoughts. So some for the work, some for the family, and some for the like nature. And there's another voice on my mind that you should stop thinking of like the random thought. Like I just don't know what a good meditation should be. Like should I control the thoughts or I just let it be?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that's my question. Should I control it?
Mm-mm. Yes, so many people who I give meditation instruction to, as I give meditation instruction to you, I say, thinking is okay. Thinking is okay. Which we don't believe, because we're kind of taught thinking seems to be a problem. And then people meditate, then I ask how to go, they said, I'm sorry to point this out, but they say, I was okay, but I was thinking too much. And then I get a little like, I thought I told you, thinking's okay. So I'm sorry we're playing this out here. But it's hard to believe. It's hard to believe that. So everything is just happening super fast. Okay. A long-term student of mine was complaining about his thinking. And I compared our mind to Niagara Falls. You know, there's a big waterfall, Niagara Falls. And our mind is like Niagara Falls. It's just going and going. But he found this analogy helpful. He visioned like he's meditating next to Niagara Falls. So your body can settle, part of your mind can settle, and another part of your mind is Niagara Falls. And you just know that that's what humans do. There's a great analogy that different organs in our bodies secrete hormones, our stomach secretes digestive juices, our mind secretes thoughts. So it's not wrong. It's just natural. It's just a little bit of our attitude towards our thoughts, and the body really helps. You're sitting up straight, so you're strong, you're energetic, you're stable. And then if your thoughts are like a big wind, you can handle it. difficulties in your life. Okay, I was gonna say this at some point. It's like sometimes you can think, oh, this kind of practice, I'll be calm and I'll be peaceful and I'll be in meditation. So I've had, okay, I was going through a divorce and I'm like, okay, I'm going to meditate. And next thing I know, I'm lying on the ground crying my head off. That was wonderful. So that's what I needed to do. So we don't set up this, we make things worse almost if we set up this dualism of thinking, no thinking, calm, upset. We just, the point's to just wake up to what's going on and to have compassion towards ourselves.
So you talk about natural desires and greed. So how do you reflect in your life to know you're not to, you're pursuing, like, obviously you like, I want happiness or love from others or money for a good life, but how do I reflect myself to know that I'm not being too greedy? And like, what's the boundary there that you should look for in your life to know you're not being taken away by the greed?
So you need to study yourself and you need to pay attention to the situation. Sometimes we learn from experience. Well, sometimes it's very clear, like, I'm gonna have, this food tastes so good, I'm gonna have a lot more. And then it's like, oh, I don't feel so good. But at the time we want a lot more, we forget about indigestion. That's like the simplest thing. So we just become interested. We become interested in, and also we can get input from other people. So looking at other people's faces, you can get some clues. How they're reacting to your behavior. So that it's a good starting point is to just be concerned and serious about when am I starting to get a little too greedy. And it differs with who you're with, it differs with the situation. It's always changing. That's why we need to pay attention.
Thank you for listening to this podcast offered by Jokoji Zen Center. Our Dharma talks are offered free of charge, and this is made possible by the donations we receive. Your support helps us to continue to offer the Dharma. For more information about Jokoji, please visit us on the web at jokoji.org.